Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Chris Evans here with a special edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio, starring British Vogue editor-in-chief and European editorial director of Vogue, Edward Enninful.
When I get spotted on a train, it's because I look a little bit like Ron Weasley. But when this next guest is spotted, he gets a modelling contract. Life can be so unfair. His new memoir, A Visible Man, is out today. Madonna sang about it, and now he runs it. How wonderful. Changing the world one cover page at a time, it's Edward Enninful!
Yeah, Edward Enninful. How are you, Edward?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on the book and an amazing life.
Thank you.
Thus far. My first question is, have you been to Anna Wintour's house on Long Island?
I have, actually.
Of course you have. For people who don't know, who is she? What is her legend? Why is she so good at her job?
Anna is, you know, a legendary editor. She's opened the door for so many. She's championed the fashion industry from great heights. And yeah, well, you know, she opened the door for me. She employed me at US Vogue in 2004, and that sort of really helped me get to where I am today.
Okay, and I got to tell you, because your book, it just got all my juices flowing in all the right places.
So yesterday, thank you.
Last night, whilst I'm finishing the book, my wife logs on our laptop and watches that amazing documentary, The September Issue.
Yes, yes.
And you're in that quite a lot. That was shot in 2007.
Yes, I was a young editor then.
Yeah, yes. So tell us about that time and tell us about that documentary.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd left London. I got a call from Anna's office to come and work for American Vogue, where I worked for 7 years. But I was like a fish out of water. You know, I'd been in London, you know, a cool stylist, and there I was at this institution of Americanness, so to say. And it was very, very different. You know, everything had to be approved. You know, you shoot a story, a fashion story, and you thought it was in the magazine, and next minute it'll be in the bin. So I was just making sense of everything in that film.
And what's great for me about it was, I had no idea before I watched the documentary and read your book that the September issue is such a big deal. Mm. And of course, here we are, September the 6th. So I pick up a copy of Vogue on the way in today at the petrol station.
Oh, fantastic. With Linda Evangelista on the cover.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, is it the same for UK Vogue? And it is the same. The September issue is the big deal.
Yes. Someone says September is the January of fashion.
Yeah. And but also, we were talking today off the back of that. You know, for us, for especially parents, September, we think, is the real start of the new year. It's not really January. And you obviously feel the same. Why is it so important?
Because it's sort of the beginning of the season, as we call it. You'd have just come from the fashion week, new clothes, new ideas, and advertisers, really, that's the month they love the most. So the September issue, it's our biggest issue of the year.
And it takes longer to compile than any other issue, does it?
Well, there are more pages generally.
Right, okay.
You know, you have to work twice as hard.
And do you take US Vogue's lead? Do you sort of, because it's all Condé Nast, isn't it? So do you talk to each other about what you're going
to
do?
No, we talk to each other. At the moment, you know, we're a global company. We talk to each other. We share some stories, but every country is still sort of its own thing.
Yeah, okay. And when you look at now that you have the big job, you are the big dog yourself here in the UK and in Europe, do you wait for Anna's September issue? Do you compare it to yours? What you might have done, what she's done?
British women are very different. British women are original. You know, British women are incredible. Women generally are incredible. And Anna deals with American women who are also amazing. So it's two different points of view.
Yeah. You know? When you talk in the book about 2017, when you got the call, or there were whispers saying that the previous incumbent of 20 odd years of British UK Vogue was leaving, and you may have a chance of getting the job, and then you got to pitch yourself to the owners of Condé Nast. And what did you do? So first of all, the process began with you looking back through the 100 years odd history of Vogue. Tell us how you prepared to try and bag the big gig that you now have.
I mean, you know, I went through all the old issues, looked at, you know, it's the strengths, the weaknesses, but also I looked around the world we lived in and saw, you know, so many people I saw not represented, you know, women of a certain age, you know, women of a certain size, you know, race. And I thought I wanted to create a magazine that reflected Britain today in all its glory.
And so, that was the thrust of your pitch,
yes.
Wasn't it? Because you felt anyhow that Vogue had been drifting away from Britishness for one reason or another, and it probably didn't know why, it just was.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was a sign of the times, I suppose. But, you know, that's why, you know, I guess I was brought in to, you know, sort of bring a different point of view.
So you come from Ghana, you land in Britain in Ghana. How old were you?
13.
13 years old. Okay, wet behind the ears.
Wet.
Dripping wet behind the ears. Not a pot to pee in or a window to throw it out
Nothing.
Of.
Nothing.
You know, and here we are, 37 years later, and you the... A round of applause, you're the editor.
Oh, thank you.
That is so cool. I'm thank so you. Pleased and so happy for you because... You are such an inspiration to everybody, everyone.
Oh, thank
Look
you,
how
Chris.
Far you can go. And it was always thus, wasn't it? So you were always dreaming about fashion.
Always dreaming.
You're surrounded by frocks and your mum, who was a seamstress.
Yeah, my mum was amazing.
Tell us about all that.
I mean, my you know, I grew up sort of around my mother's knee, as they say, and she was a brilliant seamstress making clothes. But what I learned from my mother was beauty. Women were beautiful, no matter... Like going back to say, no matter what background, what shape, I learned about inclusivity from a very young age, and beauty. My God, my mother was incredible. She passed away a few years ago, but she's still here with me.
She she's in you. She's speaking to me right now. Is what she's doing. You know,
and she was a great seamstress,
and I really mean that. So she was a seamstress. You know, she had a little company going, didn't
yes,
she?
Yes.
So tell us about that.
Yeah, she had a company in Ghana, sort of 40 girls. You know, an atelier just really making incredible clothes for ministers' wives and
designing
head of state's
them as well.
Wives. Pardon me?
Designing them as well?
Yeah, designing, sewing. And she was just incredible. When I look at a lot of designers now, she would have really made it had she been born in England at the right time, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, you've carried that torch for her in so many ways. I mean, so what you do and how you've done it. People, you've got to read this book, people. It is so amazing. It's Edward Enninful's A Visible Man. It's such a fantastic book. I love this story. So not only were you sort of immersed in your mum's world of fashion and women and colour and, you know, possibilities, but then you go to your auntie's salon.
Oh, my God. Dolly Dots.
And here we go again.
Yeah. I go to my auntie's salon. She was a great hairdresser. And I looked around and I saw magazines for the first time. And I remember the American magazines like Ebony and Jet. Nobody knows that now. And Time Magazine. And a whole world opened up for me, a whole portal. I'm like, I didn't even know what fashion was. I didn't know what glamour was, but it was incredible. I was hooked from a young age.
Yeah, okay. So that's where... That's one of the reasons you're here where you are now. Now, your dad, as you write about very candidly in your book, you had your fall out. He chucked you out twice for various different reasons. But without him, you wouldn't be here either.
Exactly.
So tell us about that.
I mean, you know, my dad was a military man. He was sort of, you know, very authoritative. He was very, you know, precise. And he was tough on the boys. And I was so gentle and so soft. I didn't really understand him. But now, after my mother passed... We've sort of developed such a great relationship. I was always so scared of him. You know, I'd be drawing little sketches and he'll walk in and I'll just toss them away because, you know, boys weren't supposed to do that in Ghana. But now, you know, he's so soft now. How old is my dad now? He's like 85 or something.
Yeah.
And very sweet. So we kind of, you know, made up.
So he took you out a couple of times. What did you want to do? Because you were spotted by a potential agent to be a model.
Yeah, Simon Foxen, yeah.
That's how it all began. What did you want to do when you arrived at the age of 13?
I mean, I was programmed to be a lawyer. You know, when you come from an African family, they didn't know what the media was.
Yeah.
So you're either a lawyer or a doctor. That was it. So that was what I was programmed to do. And then I was spotted on a train and discovered this world of fashion, London... And I was hooked.
So what happened in that exchange on the train?
Well, he was staring at me, Simon, and I really didn't know why. I didn't think I was good looking by any stretch. I was so skinny, you know. And he came up, gave me his card and told me he was, you know, an editor, one of the biggest editors in London. And I remember going home, giving the card to my mom, and my mom was like, you are not going into that industry. And, you know, 16-year-old, I wore her down. I remember every day. And then I was stopped a few weeks later by a model agent again. And then this time she gave in and called.
So that's not a coincidence it happened twice on the bounce. You must have had something going on, wasn't you?
And here I am.
So you were 16 then.
Yes.
You're the same age as Kate Moss. You're a very, very good friend.
Yes.
And so 2 years prior to that, the same thing happened to her, but on a plane.
Yes, on a JFK.
Tell people that story if you don't
mind. Yeah, I think, you know, Kate and I have known each other forever. She was discovered at JFK. And I remember I go to what we call castings. It's when, you know, when you go to a casting with your portfolio and the client looks through it and says whether you've got the job or not. And it was this amazing job for Pepe Jeans. And I wanted that job so badly. And in walks this girl, 14 years old, like literally lit up the room, scraggly beauty. And it was Kate Moss. And she got that job. And to this day, I'm still bitter about it.
But you are like Bezzy. So, you know, when I first read about you, I thought, obviously, he's come to know her via, you know, his sort of more senior years in the fashion industry.
No, we were kids together.
But it's not, I know, exactly. Yeah. And same with Naomi Campbell.
Yeah, Naomi too. Naomi and I were early 90s when I kept seeing her in, you know, shows and magazines. And I thought, I really need to get her for the cover of ID. You know, at the moment, ID wasn't, we didn't have any money. So I hustled to Paris, shot her for the cover. And then that was the beginning of a 30-whatever-year friendship.
So who else was in the gang? You have Kate Moss, you have Naomi Campbell.
Myself, there was a makeup artist, called Pat McGrath, yeah, who really is an incredible sort of human being. And really, it was the three of us. We were the sort of the only people of colour in the industry at the time, to be honest. And we sort of, you know, helped each other up and, you know.
How was it tough? Was it exciting? Was trailblazing, did it take bravery or was it fearlessness? Or did you not see it like that?
I mean, it was just naivety, really. It was like, I've been given this job, just go, survive. It was called survival, really.
And what's great is you went in as a model and then you very quickly became a stylist.
Yes.
You got to style people. What does that mean to the rest of us?
A stylist is somebody who, you know, dresses people for the pages of a magazine. So you get the clothes, but you also create the character. What is she going to look like? What's the hair going to look like? What's the makeup going to look like? So you're really like a creative director more. So I progressed onto that, and I did that for, my God, up until 5 years ago, to be honest.
So Kate was asked about, you know, what is the dream shoot? And she says, Kate Moss, she says the dream shoot is all about the dream team.
The dream team, the best team, you know, and then models feel really comfortable. They trust you. And, you know, you think of the woman at the end who's going to be looking at the end result. For me, that's very important, not to lose sight of the reader.
Voyage of Discovery, your sexuality.
Yes.
You talk about that in the book. You talk about everything in the book.
Everything.
You know?
I mean,
everything,
you know,
in the book.
I mean, for me, the book was really for people who are suffering, you know, whether it's with imposter syndrome, whether it's with, you know, alcoholism, whether it's with the careers. I just really wanted to address that, as well as celebrating, you know, women.
You had an epiphany to do with alcohol, didn't you? So
yeah.
In
my 20s, I was out in London and I realised at the age of 30 that I needed to get my life together. But because I'd started so young, at 18, by the time I was 30, I'd lived the life of a 50-year-old.
Yeah, and you had a nice flat. You had.
Yes, I had everything. And I really wanted to get my life into shape and my life into order. So I decided to stop drinking and you know, thank God for that.
Yeah, I haven't met many people who didn't have a drink for 14 years, but then they said, I think I'll be all right with tequila.
Yeah, I mean, I was just like, I'd been sober for so long. I thought, well, you know, I wanted to try drinking occasionally, and it hasn't affected me in any way.
But you have an infinite and an unpayable debt of gratitude to Alcoholics Anonymous, don't you?
Oh, my God. It really saved me. It taught me about, you know, getting my life together, a spiritual side, but it also taught me about sort of everybody being equal, level.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't better than anybody, and nobody was better than me, and that, you know, really stays with me every day. Even as an editor of Vogue, it's just a title.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a human being.
Of course, first and foremost. And the thing about AA is, you know, it's all about higher power, isn't it? And once you surrender to that, you take the pressure off yourself.
Yes.
And it's not a sort of, it's not one sort of denying one's responsibilities. It's just different to that, isn't it? It's more, they say that sometimes in order to retain power, you have to give it away.
You have to give it away.
And that's what that does, isn't it, that process?
Yeah, and it levels the field, you know. I remember I'll be doing service, as it's called, service is when you sort of make tea, coffee, with homeless people, and you're on the same level. You know, you're just Edward. Nobody gives a damn who you are. That's it.
You had this great job at ID. In the end, you got, you know, it was funny because you're hanging around ID. I used to hang around radio stations. You didn't care if you're getting paid as long as you
didn't
could.
Didn't care. Oh,
you know, the experience is worth its weight in gold, wasn't it?
I couldn't sleep. I couldn't wait to go work for free.
Me too. Edward, me too. So it's ID was massive at the time. The yes. Face magazine was massive yes. at the time. Just tell us about that. Period.
Yeah, it was a great period. I mean, we had ID and The Face. I was the fashion director for ID. It was a great time. It was a lot of young people. We talked about Kate already, Naomi, photographers like Corinne Day, David Sims. And we didn't want to be the 80s. We wanted to create our own realities for the 90s. And they called it grunge. You know, we shot in flats, you know, dirty flats, dirty beaches. But that was our reality. And the whole world latched onto it. And so, yeah, that, you know, Kurt Cobain was doing grunge in Seattle, and fashion and music collided beautifully. Happy Mondays, Primal Scream, you know, it was what we call the big flat. Fashion, music, art, hand in hand.
Summer of Love as well, 1990.
Oh, I love the third Summer of Love.
Oh, my goodness me. Was it just an amazing time to because they say don't mix business with pleasure, but to be honest, you couldn't not, could you?
That's all we did.
One and the same.
That's it. We partied together, we worked together, and we were so happy to be together. Yeah. And we were all, like you said, penniless, so we just had big dreams. Yeah. And we just shared those dreams. We talked about fashion every day. And it was incredible. One of those times you can never recreate, you know, youth.
It's so funny, isn't it? Because you're having the life that billionaires want but can't even buy, yet you can't afford at the same time. So there's that great story you tell about Naomi when she was going out with Adam Clayton.
Yes.
And she says, oh, Adam says, oh, you got to come and stay with us for a while. And you thought, well, if I had the money for the airfare, I might try and do that.
I had like 50 quid in my pocket.
and it wasn't even yours. Somebody lent it to you.
Let's go. You know, I was so broke. I was working for ID. She was a supermodel. She's like, let's go to Dublin. And I'm like, oh, not this time.
Yeah, yeah.
Next time. Knowing I had no money in my pocket even to get home. So, yeah, so that's Naomi all over.
So you grow up with Naomi, you grow up with Kate, you grow up with your mates, you can have the dream team. But, you know, still, there are world stars that then become your friends, like Madonna, for example.
Yes.
You know, what was it like when you first realised, you know, because some people think, you know, other people in show business are their friends and they're not, because then they move on and they don't realise that they're not necessarily being used, but they're part of this kind of journey. But these people now really genuinely are your friends. Yeah. And, you know, from the sounds of it, you're a very good friend, you know, and great friends, really good friends are hard to find. But when you find them, you should never let them go. So was there a moment when you were in a room, because you talk about various parties that you held and who's there?
Yeah.
Was there a moment when you thought, blimey, this really is my life?
Oh, I still have that today. That little boy from Ghana who arrived penniless, sharing rooms. I still have those moments, and I think that's what keeps me who I am. That's what really keeps my feet on the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can never lose those moments.
When was the first time you thought you experienced that? And you thought, this is...
I mean, when I was in New York, I was working for Calvin Klein. Right. And when they flew us over, Kate was now a full supermodel. It was late 90s. And I worked for Calvin. And one day I went to Times Square and saw a billboard and with my work. And I just thought, wow.
In Times
Who would
Square.
Have thought?
Bada, bada, bing.
You know, who would have thought?
Were you receiving decent paychecks at the time? Was Calvin...
Oh, no, yeah, it was okay.
You're on the way. You're on the way, yeah?
I mean, I was penniless before at ID.
That's what
so
I'm saying.
Anything was a plus.
Okay. Because your story... I mean, because Kate has a very similar Calvin Klein story to yours, because it was at the same time.
Yes.
You know, it's very important in her career. Where do we go to next? We talk about W. I suppose, because we talk, you know, we're coming up on time, but I suppose you better cut to the chase. I mean, there's the OBE, there's all that going, there's the palace.
There's a lot in there.
Yeah, and as king of the guest list, you know, the palace say, well, you can only ever have a plus one, but you managed to squeeze extras in.
Extras, Naomi, my sister, my father, my in-laws, you know. It was such a wonderful day. Really.
Of course it was. It was an amazing day. And Naomi booked a lunch or something.
Yes, she booked lunch.
A roast.
Claridge's. And we spent the whole afternoon really figuring out what she was going to wear that night.
Unbelievable.
But Naomi has this way where she ropes you into things without you even realising.
Yeah.
You
know? She is a formidable human being.
She's incredible.
I've met her a couple of times. Right. You know, I went to her house once for dinner when she was going out with a certain person. Yeah. And she is just, there's nobody like, well, I've never met anybody
there's
like her.
There's nobody like her.
Yeah.
When we did the black issue for Italian Vogue, the title was, "There's only one Naomi." You know, you can't make her up. And she's so generous. I mean, the press always paint her however they want to paint her, but she's very loyal to her friends and her family.
Yeah, but she's press proof. You know? Do you know what I mean? I think Kate Moss is press proof as well. Do you know what I mean? Because they can catch them doing anything or whatever they think they're doing.
They've been around forever.
And they go, yeah. And what's your point? This is what people. There's a real world out there. People do this stuff.
Yeah, they're just themselves.
It's not right.
Authentic.
But we are press proof.
You are definitely.
Well, I think those two sort of lead the charge on that one. Just very briefly, let's talk about that special edition of Italian Vogue before we move on to where you are now and where you might be tomorrow. Not literally tomorrow, but who knows? Because it was very important that. Again, just speak to that for a second, if you don't mind.
Speak to
the Italian. I remember Naomi Campbell.
It was, you know, sort of early 2000s, and we went to the fashion week and realized there wasn't one black model in any show. Yeah. The closest she got to black was, you know, they thought having an East Asian model was really black. And I remember talking to Stephen Meisel, the photographer, that we need to do something. We need to help the black model. We need to bring her back. So Stephen spoke to Franco Sozzani, who was the editor-in-chief of Italian Vogue at the time, and the black issue was born. And it was a brilliant issue. Black models, cover to cover, Naomi, Iman, you name it. But I also realized that at that time, I said to myself, if I ever got into a position, I would have women of all sizes, all colors, all races, all religions in the magazine every month.
But so, that black issue was a game changer, wasn't it?
Oh, it was such a game changer.
And was it an instant hit?
Instantly. Right. They had to reprint 40,000 copies, right, which at that time was a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, and it shows that, you know, black can sell.
All right, so 2017.
Yes.
Right? You get a whisper that you might be getting this job, or that you've got a chance. Who were you up against? What did you think your real prospects were of, in percentage terms, of getting the job you now have and do so brilliantly, my friend?
Oh, thank you. I mean, I thought, look, there's no way I'm going to get this job. You know, I'm a man, I'm black, I'm gay, I'm, you know, I've got it all going for me. All the things, really, right? All the things that make you invisible. And I just, you know, all I had was like a body of work and you know, And a vision of creating Vogue that little girls could look in and see themselves and talk about issues of the day and really reflect the world, you know, not a Vogue that was stuck up there in another world. And that was it, really.
So when did you find out? What time of day was it? What day was it? Where were you? Okay, what did you do? Who were you with? Blah, 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 blah.
Well, I was in New York, and I got a call from Jonathan Newhouse, who was the chairman of Condé Nast. He asked me to lunch, so I went to lunch. And he said, you know, I don't know if you're going to get this job, but you know, can you just look at this press release for me and help me, because I'm having problems. I looked at the press release, and the press release said Edward Enninful is the new editor of British Vogue, and I was like, you're kidding. So that's how Jonathan presented it to me.
That's a cool way of doing it.
It was the best way, and I realized the press release was prepared, and then the rest.
So what did you do next?
I literally packed up New York and moved to London with my dog and, you know, my husband at the moment.
Yeah, congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And isn't it a great story that all the things that could have and did go against you for a time, in the end, were the things that completely went for you? And that's the lesson.
Yeah, and that's why the book is called A Visible Man, because all those things are supposed to make you invisible. And somehow, you know...
Right, Anna.
Power through.
Anna is in the winter of her years. By the way, so I can say that. And by the way, the winters can last forever, I think. And it's when we know most about ourselves, and it's when we can be most useful in the right job. But she's not going to be there forever, or unless she becomes the first person to live forever, which she might, by the way.
Yes.
How do you feel about that gig?
I mean, I think, you know, Anna's doing a great job. You know, she's a very great editor. I'm really happy doing what I do now, which is still working on British Vogue. I'm now in charge of European Vogue.
I know.
So, you know, I'm really, really happy for, you know, right now.
Yeah, but it's funny because in the Richard Coles interview in the Sunday Times, you gave a very similar diplomatic
answer. But it's true. I mean, I don't know what other answer to give.
No, I know, but I would say you know. But what do I know, Edward? But
you know everything.
But I now know you a bit more. And it's via your book. And I was so excited to meet you. So anything you'd like to say? Because we'll put this as a pop-up podcast, shall we? Of course we must.
Of course.
So, and that'll be there forever. What would you like to say to people forever? Because this will be a podcast and it'll be up there until...
Yeah, I'm like, you know, if you're suffering, if you're going through hard times, you know, just realize that, you know, that there's light at the end of the tunnel. You know, I came to England penniless, and I wasn't supposed to be here, really. And here I am, and if I can do it, most people can. Really.
Okay, and one fashion tip for us all on this Tuesday. What can make any outfit better? A, for a bloke, B, for a woman?
For a woman, a nice piece of jewellery, you know. And for a man, I'll say flat front trousers. All I've worn my whole life.
So not far too short.
Well, I mean, it's very brave. I mean, that's your style. What can I say?
Or foolish. Edward, thank
I
you
wish so. I could get away with short shorts.
Give it a go. Edward Enninful, his book, A Visible Man, is out now, and it's one of the most inspirational books I have ever read. So thank you, Edward. Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.
Thank you,
Let's
Chris.
Do that, shall
Happy
we?
Christmas.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
All right, that's it for now. How great is that man? Thanks for listening. Why not listen back to some of our other podcasts from Graham Norton, Minnie Driver, and even Noel Gallagher. All right, ta-ra. Sorry. Ta-da!
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.